Welcome to Truth Be Had Radio, right here on republicbroadcasting.org. I'm Kevin Barrett, and I do this show every week, same time, same channel. Tonight, we have a doozy of a show coming up, bringing on a bunch of politicians and political experts. Wait a minute, you're saying politicians? Sorry, you know, we get enough of those. They hit us up with their commercials. People are constantly blathering about this nonsense in the mainstream corporate media. What are you doing bringing on politicians? Well, that's a pretty good question, and the answer is we're bringing on, two of the best politicians ever to come out of the Midwest. Well, maybe not the best politicians per se, but the best people to move into the field of politics. One, of course, as many of my listeners know, is Governor Jesse Ventura, the former Minnesota governor. One of the most interesting people in politics and one of the bravest hearts and best minds. He's finally come right on out and said it about 9/11, leading the way, the first mainstream politician to confront the evidence for the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center. Later in the show, we'll bring on Ed Thompson. I homeschool my kids, and last year I got a hold of their textbook on American government. It's called Jesse Ventura Tells It Like It Is. It actually makes a pretty darn good introduction to the American system of government for kids. And I'm honored now to have its author on the show. Governor Jesse Ventura has been a Navy SEAL, a professional wrestler, a talk show host, a truth-talking talk show host like I try to be. He was the mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, and the elected governor of Minnesota in 1998. He set popularity records in the governor's office. Even though he was under siege by the controlled mainstream media, his latest bestseller is Don't Start the Revolution Without Me. Well, without further ado, it's an honor to welcome to Truth Jihad Radio Governor Jesse Ventura. Welcome, Governor.
Hi, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How are you doing? You're doing a pretty heavy-duty media and book signing schedule, I understand.
Well, that's what they make you do when you write these books. You know, you got to spend about 2 weeks going. Now, I'm here right now in L.A., but I fly out tomorrow to New York, and I'll be in New York until Friday. And then finally, as an expatriate, I can go home to my home in Baja California Sur, about 850 miles below the border.
You'll be ready for a rest down there when by the time this tour is over.
Oh yeah, absolutely you are.
You know, I'd love to, you know, just thank you and tell you how much I appreciate your bravely speaking out about the evidence for the controlled demolition of the World Trade Center on the Alex Jones Show this week. I was really bowled over by your courage and your willingness to confront this toughest of the tough issues in public. Have you had any reaction?
You get some real negative reaction. I did a show last night. I guess the guy's name was Phil Henry or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've heard of him, but he wouldn't even let me talk. He called me names. He shouted over the top of me, and that's the part that really gets me. I mean, I don't know if what happened at 9/11. But I certainly know I have a lot of questions, and it just seems like when you ask a question about it, you're immediately attacked.
Well, I know that too.
And using the old the Shakespeare stuff, they doth protest too much.
Well, that's for sure. You know, I know exactly how it feels. I got raked over the coals and, you know, brought on Fox News to, you know, Hannity and O'Reilly did the same thing to me after I was exposed as an, you know, evil conspiracy professor. And you know, I think the country needs to mature a little bit and have a discussion about this. It's a big issue, after all.
Well, exactly. And when there's things that you don't understand, you know, and what I get find amazing about it is I was in the Navy Underwater Demolition Team 12. I was trained in demolition by the finest the Navy had. And I was trained by a Chief Warrant Officer Casey. And he instilled into me a very simple premise. There is no dumb question. If you don't know it, ask it. And believe me, that applies when you work with demolition. And so I still live by that. And so I'm asking questions about 9/11, and yet you can't get any straight answers. You're attacked over it. They tell you you're a fool and an idiot, and how can you possibly believe that? And yet I'm having trouble with how could those buildings fall at the rate of gravity.
Well, a whole lot of us are having trouble with that. I think anybody with eyes
who takes a look at Building 7 has these questions. And that question, what happened to Building 7, is as good a question as there is, and it still hasn't been answered.
Exactly. How can two planes knock down three buildings?
Right.
You know, and all I'm asking for is an explanation, and the 9/11 Commission didn't even address it.
That's right.
And so why shouldn't we continue to ask it? I mean, I want to know for my own knowledge. As a guy who worked in demolition, I find it very hard to believe that two planes could knock down three buildings.
Well, a whole lot of us do, and we also have questions about, you know, why Larry Silverstein bought those buildings in the first place, the biggest white elephant in real estate history, hemorrhaging money for the city of New York, full of asbestos, and he buys them, over-insures them for terrorism, and they fall down 6 weeks later, and he rakes in $4.5 billion so far on his six-week investment, and now he's asking for another more than $10 billion. And the media won't ask any questions about this.
Well, I guess that's just circumstance.
I guess so.
That's what we're supposed to believe.
You know, you've talked about what you call the media jackals. How are we going to get the media to do its job instead of acting like a pack of jackals?
Well, it's very difficult because, see, the media today is no longer into reporting and informing you. They're in the entertainment business. And that's very dangerous. And what I mean by that is they're no longer into reporting the news. They're into creating it. And once the media starts creating the news, and you know who the downfall was of all this? The show 60 Minutes.
Now, that's an interesting one because most people think of 60 Minutes as a rare example of real television journalism.
And it is. It is. They had great investigations. They did a tremendous job, but here's why they're at fault. Up until that point, all the bigwigs, all the bean counters wrote the news off as a losing money-making proposition. 60 Minutes rose to number one in the ratings while the light went off with the bean counters, and they thought, you mean we can make money with the news? And at that point, news became entertainment. And so even though 60 Minutes did a great job in what they did, because of the high ratings and people striving for that knowledge of watching the show and the investigations, it changed the concept of what the news was at all the networks. Now they're into entertainment, and it's all about ratings.
Well, Governor, I do think that that's part of the problem, but it can't be the whole problem, because when they put on really controversial stuff like JFK assassination debates and 9/11 stuff, it gets a huge response. When call-in shows break out the 9/11 issue, the switchboards light up. So in a sense, it is entertainment, or at least it's interesting, it's gripping, people pay attention to it. Why can't, you know, I would think the advertisers would like this. Why do they black it out the way they do?
Well, wouldn't it destroy what the American dream is?
Well,
if the truth comes out, won't that destroy? All of a sudden, we would have to look at our government not as a friend, but a foe?
Well, at least it's something that needs to be cleaned up.
Well, you and I agree on that. Don't think I'm wrong. I'm just giving you the other side. I'm attempting to give you the other side of their thought process. They must protect the American dream. They can't allow, like in the case of John Kennedy, what would the country have done if they'd have found out we killed our own president?
Well, they might have done what Kennedy said he was going to do and tear the CIA up and scatter it to the winds.
Well, that may be true, too, but it also would have, you got to remember, we in the United States have a bit of arrogance about us, and we live in a very utopic world. Through both of those things, we don't like to hear, we always say we want to hear the truth, but we really don't. And the case in point, the very recent one, Jose Canseco. He was the only baseball player telling the truth about the rampant use of steroids, and look what they did to him. They bastardized him, they killed him every way they could, and when the truth finally came out, he was the one who was honest and truthful on the thing, and has anybody apologized to Jose and said, gee, Jose, we're sorry for what we did to you? No, they continue to do it.
Well, that's a good point. And, you know, you've had an interesting career as an unusually truth-telling kind of politician.
First of all, let me correct you. I'm not a politician. I'm a statesman.
Okay.
Here's the difference. A politician makes it a career. A politician gets elected from one position to the next position and does it for 30 to 35 years. I've been a mayor for 4 years and a governor for four. I could have been reelected in both of them, but I chose to go back to the private sector with 4 years in between, and I'm now back to the private sector again. That's what our forefathers had in mind, I believe, when they created this country. And so I don't call myself a politician. I call myself a statesman because it is not my career. I go and I serve and I do the best job I can, and then I go back to whatever it was I did before or whatever I knew I want to do now.
Well, if there's anybody who deserves to be called a statesman these days, I think you're it.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, as a statesman who goes back and forth, are you considering the possibility of going back into the field of government, given that your book, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, does sort of dangle that out there as a possibility?
Well, it's too late to get in the presidential race, naturally, right now, because, you know, I would have to get ballot access in all 50 states, and of course then the Democrats and Republicans would sue to keep me off the ballot, and, you know, they'd tie it all up and you'd never get it. But there is a Senate race brewing in Minnesota where I don't particularly like either candidate, but here's what they should do in this country. We should have the option when we go into the ballot booth, and it should be on there, none of the above. And we should be allowed to vote for none of the above, because what that is you're voting a no-confidence vote in government. You're saying, yes, I'm here to participate in voting, but I do not like any of the candidates the two parties are putting forward. This is a no-confidence vote. And I'm willing to bet at the local and possibly the state and even the federal level, there would be cases where none of the above would win.
You could change your name to None of the Above, or I could change my name to None of the Above and take office.
Well, I don't know about that, but I think it would send a strong message, don't you?
Absolutely.
None of the Above prevailed?
Absolutely.
And see, maybe that's what we should truly be working for, because to change government, and I learned this in Minnesota, you have to do it incrementally. You have to just slowly chip away at the foundation of this horrible mess the Democrats and Republicans have created that is based upon the concept of panhandling and bribery.
Well, that's right. And my previous guest, Rolf Lindgren, who's a Wisconsin political analyst, has worked with Ed Thompson a little bit. Ed's coming on later. He thinks that possibly talking about 9/11 could actually help demolish the two-party system, or at least, you know, open up room for something else, because so many people know about this. You know, the poll showed 37% say it was an inside job. Most of them think it was passive inside job. But a hardcore of, you know, 5-10% or more know what happened. And those people, you know, they're not going to vote for just any old Joe. But
let me interject something, too, that I think we're going to have to deal with also. My father and mother-in-law, my parents are gone now, but they're elderly people, and when I breach this and bring it up to them, and I think there's great sentiment this way, elderly people in that, they don't want to believe in their hearts that people could be that evil. And I think that's what we also face out there on this, is people don't want to believe or come to the reality that there are that evil of people out there that would do that type of stuff, except because of the fact that they go on TV and they portray themselves as being so wholesome and all of this stuff. So that's another element that you've got to deal with on this, is that people simply do not want to believe it.
That's true. I do know of one friend of mine. His wife is in a assisted living facility with a lot of elderly people, and they're now a hotbed of 9/11 truthers. So it can happen, regardless of the age group. But I think you're right. Nobody wants to think these thoughts. But, you know, when there's that level of evil in high places, at some point you have to do something about it.
Well, always remember the most evil man probably of the, you know, since Jesus was here, Adolf Hitler. His famous quote, the bigger the lie, the easier the sell.
Absolutely.
You know, and that comes from the most evil man that I know of, I think.
Yep, yeah, the big lie quote is so apropos of this. You know,
exactly.
We do have some callers already, and our first caller here is Michael Jackman of Student Scholars for 9/11 Truth.
Let me interject. I can take a few of them, and then I've got to move on to another phone call because I'm on a heavy schedule.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Just one call at least. Michael,
well, give me a couple of them.
Hey, I'm here, guys. How you doing, Jesse? How you doing, Kevin?
Good. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Great. I would like to take the time, Jesse, to invite you to a symposium we're having in Keene, New Hampshire. It's going to be called the New England 9/11 Symposium. Family members, whistleblowers, and researchers speak out. It's going to be quite an event. We have an awesome roster already lined up, and with you going even more public lately, it would be excellent to have you come and check it out and maybe speak.
When is it?
It is on Saturday, May 17th, and it's going from 10 in the morning till 6 at night, maybe later. We're still working on a couple of other tentative guests, but we'd be honored to have you come.
Well, you'll have to get in touch with me somehow. I should be back from the Baja by then because I usually leave the Baja the first week in May. And
okay.
So hopefully I'll be back in Minnesota at that point in time, so you'd have to reach me there because when I'm done, I'm heading back to the Baja. I got to move forward now. Give me one more call, and then I got to run to another show.
Okay, great. Next call is Mark from Kentucky. Come in, Mark.
Yes, Mr. Ventura. When did you start actually to question the 9/11 story?
Well, when it initially happened, I was governor, and I'm a former military. I went on attack mode. Our country had been attacked. I got tunnel vision. I truthfully didn't start to question it till after I got out of office and when the Iraq War started to ramp up, because I left office in January of 2003, and, of course, the Iraq War was just starting to ramp up then for March. And it was my son, really. I'm not a big internet person, but my son kept harping on me and harping on me that I needed to watch this thing called Loose Change. And I kept putting it off, saying, oh, come on, Ty, they can put anything on the internet, blah, blah, blah. I finally took time when I got back from Mexico and I watched Loose Change with my wife. And we went through every emotion imaginable. I went through anger. I went through almost feeling sick to my stomach. I wanted to cry as I looked at this. And then I got angry at myself. And I thought, how could I have been so naive? Because I spent 4 years with the Navy underwater demolition team. I know how to blow things up, and I know what happens. And so it was at that point that getting out of, and I'm angry today because at that point I was in a position of power. Today I am not.
Well, you know, you have a very smart son, and, sir, we do appreciate you getting involved with the movement there. And just keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you. Well, I've been involved in the assassination of John F. Kennedy and studying that for 20 years, so I suppose that one's kind of wore out. It's time to get to a new one.
Thank you very much, guys.
Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Okay. Thank you, Governor Jesse Ventura. I appreciate your coming on. Bye-bye. All right. Well, that's now America's bravest statesman, not politician, Governor Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, who is angry about 9/11, angry at himself for buying the official story. And hey, I think a lot of us feel that way. And I sure hope Governor Jesse Ventura will get back into the political ring. He might be the guy who can open a lot more eyes on this. Be great to have him in this particular presidential race as an independent, but it sounds like that's not in the cards. But hey, it's just great to hear somebody who's had that kind of position willing to tell the hardest kind of truth. Well, we have some more callers. We will get to them after the break.